Last weekend, I went to Chehalis, Washington for a UFO party. It's a two-day event known as the Chehalis Flying Saucer Party, and it gets basically everybody in the town of 7,700 people out in the streets. Some are dressed as grays or something else that you would see in a low-budget sci-fi film. Others are putting out their artwork or their wares for sale. The town uses the museum and an old theater. There's a film festival in the theater. The museum has a lot of normal things that they show about the history of the town, and they just kind of snuck in some UFO-y things. It's pretty interesting and pretty fun. You could go to a coffee bar two blocks away from the entire thing, and people would have little antennas on their head, and the art that's for sale is UFO alien art. The entire town gets in on the action, and it's pretty fun. It was enjoyable, and it got me to thinking, you know, there's a lot of really interesting things that are happening right now in our solar system that NASA's reporting on and that other scientists are looking at and scratching their heads saying, hey, I don't know what to tell you guys. We have not seen this before. And I haven't really weighed in much on the whole UFO phenomenon, UAP, whatever the proper term is nowadays. Don't call me some ism because I don't use the proper modern terms. I'm going to call them UFOs, okay? Sorry. But anyway, you know, there is a lot of overlap between ancient history, the Atlantis and big rocks, the stuff I normally talk about, and, you know, ancient alien stuff. I mean, I don't know if you've heard of that show before, but it's on the History Channel. They talk about these guys called the Nanu Nanunnaki a whole lot.
Nanu, 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 Nanu,
I'll try to keep those kinds of corny jokes to a minimum going forward, but there are no guarantees. What I can guarantee is the kind of video that I usually give you, where I do some research and I read things, so you don't have to if you don't want to, but you still can. And, well, you know, it's basically a lot like my sexual performance. You may or may not enjoy this video, but I certainly will. Hi, my name's Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. You know, back in the 1980s, space was all the rage. And I don't just mean the Star Warses and Treks that we all know today. We had Battlestar Galactica, Buck Rogers, Space 1999, V, Doctor Who before CGI. Toy companies like Lego had the little generic spaceman. If you made rubber toys back in those days, you'd probably make some sort of spaceships and stuff, because this stuff was 80s kids just ate this shit up. And if you were making toys, you were selling space stuff to some degree, that was almost a no-brainer. I mean, everyone, from He-Man to James Bond, spent some time in the stars back in those days. And I loved it. I was obsessed with the idea of humans traveling in space. And I spent many a night pondering alien life and thinking about what we might find out there that we really couldn't hope to find down here. One of my favorite science fiction films from more modern times is The Europa Report, which is a fake found footage film, say that five times fast, about a trip to Europa, Jupiter's moon, and the search for extraterrestrial life. It's very grounded in reality, and like the dangers seem very normal to a guy that worked construction like me. The dangers are all too real. It's not space lasers and shit, which is what I grew up with. I mean, when I was a kid, come on, man, lasers and aliens and stuff like that. V was way cooler than the Europa Report when I was a kid. But as an adult, you know, Interstellar's good, but in all honesty, the Europa Report for me kind of takes the cake. Now, that grounded feeling that the Europa Report has is the kind of information and evidence that I look for when I'm looking at this alien stuff. Or UAPs, or little green men in their space cars, whatever the hell you want to call it, all right? Again, I'm not going to get all politically correct with these terms. Good God. Anyway, there's a reason that Chehalis, Washington has this big film festival and UFO flying saucer party. There's a reason that they do this, and it's not just because the guys there like the stuff. In June of 1947, a private pilot named Kenneth Arnold saw a UFO near Mount Rainier in Washington State. Now, Mount Rainier is tall, and it dominates the skyline anywhere it's visible. And Arnold was flying near it, and he claims that the UFO that he saw skipped across the sky like a saucer skips over water. And that statement was latched onto by the press. That's where the term flying saucer came from. That's why in Chehalis it's a flying saucer party. It's not a UFO party. Because the town of Chehalis is where the pilot was based out of that made this statement that became the ubiquitous term for flying saucers. So the town has a little pride there, and, you know, they get out in the street and celebrate that. It's kind of cool. This sighting was the first major sighting after World War II, and it was the beginning of what became known as the Summer of Saucers, as 1947, which culminated in the Roswell incident, But the majority of the early sightings were in the Pacific Northwest near Washington State, and this makes sense. Because the Hanford nuclear plant is in Washington State. It's only a couple hundred miles from Mount Rainier. Everybody up here knows what Hanford is, and when you drive by it, you're a little, but there's a lot of storage stuff in the area of nuclear waste and whatnot. But, you know, the guys on the East Coast, they put all that crap over here during World War II because all experimentals. Now, it does stand to reason that if extraterrestrials were monitoring the Earth, that nuclear activity would be high on the list of things they would want to check out. Especially after the war, a war that seems to have gotten their attention. You know, back in World War II, Foo Fighters weren't what you would call Nirvana after they cut 150 pounds of dead weight from their lineup. Foo Fighters were what pilots and bombardiers and the occasional seamen would claim to have seen in the sky. An orb chasing a plane or toying with the plane, one they couldn't shoot down and they couldn't chase down. And the interesting thing about this to me is that these were seen by all sides in all theaters of operation. Everywhere on the planet, every team saw this. And what's really cool about that is that you can look at the Japanese records, you can look at the German records, you can look at the American records and the Russian records, and you can see all the different reports of this and how it was confusing to the high commands and the people, the powers that be, the brass. They didn't know what to make of this. All the different sides seem to think that maybe it was the other guy's weapons. Maybe they had experimental stuff going on. Maybe they're more technologically superior to us. There was a lot of fear around these Foo Fighters. And, of course, this is not the oldest example of aliens potentially interacting with humans or UFOs or some sort of phenomenon seen in the sky and recorded by humans. Oh, this goes way on back. In 1350, the Visor de Conti Monastery, I'm sure I pronounced that properly, had a fresco made by a now unknown artist. In this fresco, we see the sun and the moon, most likely, portrayed in a rather uncannily spaceship-like ways. I mean, both look like they're craft housing a person who operates them, and the one said to depict the moon really looks like a spaceship from a 1950s sci-fi film. And it's important to note, this isn't some modern touch-up. This is the original painting that houses this. And we have other medieval examples. For example, in Nuremberg, Germany in 1561, we have a report detailing what sounds eerily like a battle in the skies, culminating in the crashing and burning of the craft or lights or whatever it was that was seen. Even a large rocket-shaped object is described, although it's described as a spear instead of a rocket, because they had no concept of rockets in 1561. And we have this going all over the world. In India, they have mentions of these flying chariots that were called Vimanas by the ancient authors of the Mahabharata and Ramayana. Once again, you've got your pronunciation class going on with the dunking here. But the thing is these are interesting. We got, you know, references to flying machines fighting. But that's not as interesting to me as the Kambaya artifacts, in particular the Tolima jets, as they become called. They look uncannily like airplanes, man. I mean, there's really no arguing that. And the fact that they have the tail section included, like if you're into flight at all, if you're into aeronautics at all, if you know anything about it, you'll know the tail wasn't something, it wasn't intuitive. It took some experimentation for them to figure out. And they include on a lot of these, they include the vertical and horizontal stabilizer. That's huge, okay? That is a functional tail. I mean, the shape of a handful of those is uncanny. And that, you know, that's, you can explain it away like they do and say, oh, these are fish or these are birds. And some of them clearly are fish and birds and stuff. But some of them, man, it's, if you're going to tell me that looks more like a bird to you than a jet, I'm going to call you a liar. I'm sorry. I don't know what else to tell you. And these Tolima jets, the Nuremberg report, the de Conti Monastery fresco, these are some pretty robust evidence to me for something having happened in ancient history that could have qualified as an extraterrestrial visit. Another one that's really interesting is the elongated skulls and pterodactyl mummies in Peru. And the elongated skulls are found elsewhere. The elongated skulls are actually so common and ubiquitous in the ancient world, you find them all over the place, which does make you wonder how this became a thing. Because the fact of the matter is, this is clearly uncomfortable for the infant that it's going through the process. It, like, deforms their face, right? I mean, it makes their eyes look like bugging out of their head and stuff. It's not a pretty picture, and parents tend to love their kids. And you got to watch them suffer like this for, like, a year without ever taking them out of this little head-binding thing. You know, and this is just what we know from written people that wrote about it, like Lewis and Clark and people like that. We have a lot of more modern reports, but they all die off about 100 years ago because, you know, it's kind of a human rights violation to go around binding the heads of people to figure out what's going on. It's kind of like binding feet would be, like the old Chinese thing, which, honestly, to me, I mean, we could just clone a few people and then, like, bind their heads and feet and, like, learn a lot from them. And at least it would mitigate the human rights violations. So, you know, I don't know what your thoughts on that. Leave it in the comment section below because I'm totally serious about that idea there. But anyway, this whole idea of, you know, the pterodactyl mummies especially, those are pretty interesting, pretty wild. But Peru is a place that is... I found myself very frustrated with the elongated skulls and the pterodactyl mummies and any real, like, anything that can be attached to the UFO stuff that comes out of Peru. It seems like it's very difficult to get straight answers or to get uncorrupted data from. It's extremely bad. I made a video about the elongated skulls down there, and it's worth watching because you find out that the guys in charge of those things were just, I mean, bad, bad, bad. But anyway, that's not quite as cool as, like, talking about Anunnaki or, like, any of the other cool stuff from way back in the day. I mean, the Sumerian Kings List and all that fun stuff and Zachariah Sitchin and Chariots of the Gods. Now, basically, this story is, if you read the Sumerian manuscripts from long ago, you would see that aliens came to Earth because they needed gold. They took the monkeys that were here and spliced their DNA onto them. Then they inhibited these monkeys, so these monkeys couldn't, like, challenge them. Then they started, like, screwing these monkeys a little, I guess. I'm not really sure exactly what all was going on there. Well, what I do know is that they're supposed to, like, we're supposed to harvest a bunch of gold, and then they come back and they grab this gold to do something in their atmosphere to keep them all alive. It gets all pretty complicated, right? I'm giving you the dumbed-down version, but the reality of it is, as interesting as this story is, and the fact that it does explain why humans are so attracted to precious metals across the globe, basically, it relies heavily on a severely bastardized translation of the Sumerian texts. So much so that you get to the point where it doesn't even make sense, all right? It doesn't, like, you're really looking at a huge stretch to come up with some of these things. Now, some of the stuff isn't so bad, but a lot of times we see a lot of fake images attached to this stuff where they try, or a lot of people talking about how this is a depiction of the planets orbiting the sun, and it's just, I mean, maybe it's a depiction of a generic idea of the planets orbiting the sun, but when they start attributing, like, specific knowledge to it, it does get very difficult. It doesn't stand up to scrutiny. I guess that's the best way of putting it. And I know that really rubs a lot of people the wrong way, but that's something that really does need spoken of at length. In this community, the UFO community, you've had literally CIA and KGB using this shit as disinformation since the time of my father's birth, okay? These guys have been playing with this shit forever. And it makes it very difficult to know up from down, to know who you can or can't trust. That's one of the reasons I like the Foo Fighter reports, is because these go out to a bunch of these different countries that were powerful, more powerful then than they are now. And it was also before the true espionage wars had solidified in the minds of the masses. If you look into it some, World War II was really the watershed moment for disinformation campaigns. And they really have never recovered. We really have never recovered since. And this fog of uncertainty has given us all kinds of really wild takes, like David Icke's reptilian shapeshifters in positions of power. Now, to me personally, this is so far out there that it's barely worth discussing, but I'll talk about it quickly here. The idea that there's reptilians that, you know, can shapeshift and live in the government and they're powerful and maybe they harvest adrenochrome, maybe they eat our fear. There's multiple different types of alien. He's got, like, a whole science fiction universe built up around. It's just, you can't hijack V and then sell it to me as reality. Sorry. And I know you didn't completely hijack V, but close enough, man. This one to me seems so silly. But the fact is that Dave has quite a following, and his sort of thinking is pretty common in the UFO world. I mean, French computer scientist Jacques Vallée, which is one of the leading voices of scientific reason, while accepting the UFO phenomena, he speaks of how the belief in extraterrestrials will change reality in the regards that humans will act differently if they believe in UFO visitations. And one evidence for this is the way that so many people accept or at least entertain these more outlandish theories that really don't make a whole lot of sense to me. But if you believe that UFOs definitely visit Earth, well, then it's not a big step to say that they probably are doing something here. Maybe they are infiltrating. Maybe the X-Files was onto something. Maybe V wasn't so far from the truth. And so this just keeps stretching out into oblivion, right? You get some really weird takes. And the problem with that is that you can't find the truth if you have so many things that are getting between you and what you're looking for. And I'll give you a real good metaphor for that. Right now, we have two really interesting things happening in our solar system. One of them, well, NASA just announced last week that they're almost certain that they found evidence for life on Mars. Prehistoric life, but life nonetheless.
A year ago, we thought we found what we believe to be signs of microbial life on the Mars surface. And so we put it out to our scientific friends to pressure test it, to analyze it, and go, did we get this right? Do we think this is signs of ancient life on Mars? And after a year of review, they've come back and they said, listen, we can't find another explanation. So this very well could be the clearest sign of life that we've ever found on Mars.
Now, in addition to this bombshell, we have the third interstellar object passing through our solar system since we've got the ability to track that sort of thing. There is an object known as 3I Atlas that they think is probably a comet, but they're not sure, and it's certainly from outside of the solar system. It's going way too fast and way too hard of a trajectory to be in the sun's gravitational pull. It's on its way through. As it's passing through, we're looking at it pretty close. The metaphor I was talking about a second ago, we've got all of our freaking satellites, everything pointed at it right now. Every major telescope, every array, every swinging dick is on this job right now. We're not distracting ourselves by looking at other things. This is too interesting, so we're focusing our attention. And there is a lot of interesting stuff here. This thing exudes carbon dioxide, which has some people thinking maybe it's like a bioship, but I would point out that you don't waste gas in space. You recycle that shit. They would just convert that back to whatever they wanted. And anyway, so, but it also is mostly, has a lot of nickel with almost no iron, which is basically unheard of in our solar system. But the thing that to me is the craziest about it is its coma, which is the little aurora, the little glow that you see around a comet. Its coma is backwards, okay? And solar winds are what forms a coma. It's like or what points a coma, I should say. See, so the sun pushes on all things all the time. There's solar winds that come off of it. There's powerful radioactive winds bombarding everything out there. And the comets, the coma that comes off of them, it's not being drug out because of drag, because that would become, there's nothing to pass through, there's nothing to drag against in space. It's pushed back because of the solar winds. The coma on this is pointed into the sun, and that says that it is directly opposed to normal energy flow patterns. I mean, no, they've got some explanation that there is very tentative. Again, they're looking at it with everything they got because we don't know. And that, to me, my friends, is so much more interesting to look at the things that we do know. The Foo Fighters, for example, we know governments didn't toy with this data. Okay, this did, maybe some of it, but governments didn't plant this data all over the world. The Foo Fighters phenomena was a thing. This painting from 1350, that's a thing. The Nuremberg happening in 1561, that's a thing. You can look at it and see that, like, historically, this was a thing. And that's, we don't need to get into reptilians and shapeshifters and all kinds of crazy goofy woo in order to really have something to sink our teeth into here. And that really leads me to my last point, I guess. Do I believe that aliens are here on the Earth? Do I believe they visited the planet? I mean, as usual, I'm sitting on a fence. I try so hard to look at these things with both sides, and there really is, in my mind, two main points to be made. Number one, if there are aliens out there with the ability to somewhat observe us and to visit us or send a probe, we would be interesting. We would be worth checking out. We're not just eating and rutting and shitting down here. We're doing goofy shit like making videos about UFOs and splitting atoms and stuff, right? So we got all kinds of stuff going on that would be outside the norm, you would assume, for a biological organism to check out. So we'd probably be something worth looking into. On the flip side, here we are with all that goofy tech that we're working on, splitting atoms and AI and God knows what else, the CRISPR and all kinds of things that we've got going on, playing God, as our grandparents would call it. How far do we have to go before we can get off and travel to another star? 100 years? 500 years? Do we think we'll survive that long? Do we think we won't blow ourselves up by then? Do you think we won't AI ourselves out of existence or make ourselves glow in the dark or just do some other dumb shit thing? Or even just kind of lose sight of, look at how much dumbed down we are about space compared to when I was a kid, compared to the space race. It's not as important as it once was. There's a lot of reasons that a potential hypothetical alien society wouldn't ever get to the point where they could visit us. And that's pretty dark and stark, but I mean, for those of you who have heard of the Fermi paradox, if you're into UFOs, you definitely heard of the Fermi paradox. It's basically, you know, due to the high likelihood of there being other intelligences in the universe, how come we see no evidence of it? And, you know, there's a few explanations, and one of them could be that, you know, they never get that far. They just, all that fancy space travel stuff's a pipe dream, and the monkeys always knock themselves into the Stone Age or worse. It's tough to say for certain, but one thing I do know is that you've heard me say many times, if you watched me in the past, that I'm very skeptical of ancient high technology, and I am. You're going to have to explain things to me or bring me the data. But there are times where I look at things and I say, this looks like computer language in an ancient native tongue. Or this looks like there's no way for us to have lifted this stone with the technology we had available at the time. And at that point, I am forced to shrug my shoulders and throw up my hands and say, I can't explain this. And I'm open to other hypotheses, but you're going to have to take me there. You know, you can't just jump straight to reptilians. I ain't going with you. So anyway, that's my take on the whole UFO phenomena. Make sure to check out 3Eye Atlas as this keeps going forward, dude. That's, you know, the part of my brain that's a little conspiratorial has to wonder if there's not a reason that NASA decided right now to announce that we've got signs of life on Mars, because we may well be staring down signs of life on this thing. It's coming back around in May, I think it is, and when it flies by Jupiter, there's a probe on Jupiter that they're getting ready to retire. Normally when they retire a probe, they fly it down into the atmosphere of Jupiter. But this one, they're talking about intercepting this 3Eye Atlas with it. Now, that's fucking cool, man. Now, before I go, I wanted to mention that we have the Quest for Ancient Civilizations conference coming up in Scottsdale, Arizona, the 5th through 7th of December. I'll be there along with a bunch of other people way cooler than me. Tickets are available down below, and they're not that expensive, man. And it'll be, I mean, it's December, it's Arizona. You do the math, man. Thanks a lot, and I hope to see you next time.